just with the number of buyers in the industry, valuations are improving. Our average success rate for a deal, like 93% of sites we list will sell.
That's amazing.
Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbach. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to today's episode of Rogue Startups. Today we have Thomas Smail from FE International, a well-known and highly respected website buying and selling brokerage firm. And Thomas has spoken at MicroConf and also been an attendee. And we are very excited to have you here today with us, Thomas.
Hey, Dave. Thanks so much for having me on.
Sure. So can you tell us a little bit about FE International and the overall role that you think it actually plays in bringing online businesses into legitimacy, you know, in the overall economy of buying and selling websites here?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're a full service brokerage firm. We specialize primarily in online businesses. So whether that's a SaaS business, an app business, like a blog, an e-commerce store, we do a real range. But as long as it's online, it's something we'll do. So we deal primarily with sellers, and we'll help a seller who has a business they want to sell get it sold. And being a full-service brokerage, we do almost everything for the client, from like the initial valuation, preparing sales materials, marketing the seller buyers, negotiating with buyers, drafting contracts, facilitating due diligence, all the way through to like escrow and like actually getting the money at the end of the process. So that's like a rough overview of that. In terms of like size, we deal with businesses anywhere from like $15,000-$20,000 all the way up to like the low seven figure range, so like $3 or $4 million. I mean, in terms of like our role in the space, like a lot of what I do is kind of trying to, and like our marketing team do, and the team in general do, is like trying to educate the market, especially offline investors who want to get into the space, as like legitimizing online businesses as like an actual asset class. So we deal with a lot of buyers who might previously have had a background in like real estate investing. And over the years, when I first started the company in 2010, the main opportunity I spotted was the fact that lots of people were looking to like sell their online businesses, but there weren't really that many services that could help you. There were like marketplaces out there, and there were a few brokers at the time, but most of them I felt weren't particularly good. So kind of built a service around that, and it's kind of grown up quite nicely from there. But a lot of the challenge from there is in attracting like new people into the industry, like I said, like either from like a real estate background or something similar.
So, Thomas, we're at MicroConf Europe. We talked a bit about, you know, the business, your business specifically, not the businesses you're selling, but FE International and the supply and demand sides of things, and being that the demand for sites is really high, and that a lot of your marketing efforts go into increasing supply and increasing good businesses to be able to come on the market. Is that still true? And kind of, so is that really like you're talking about where a lot of your marketing focus is going?
Yes. I mean, that's a lot of focus. I mean, from a marketing perspective, we really focus on a wide range. So I guess awareness of the industry in general, which doesn't just benefit us, it benefits, I guess, every firm and like player in the industry. Mm-hmm. Just general brand building. So there'll be a lot of people who will have a first contact with us, like many years before they ever become a client. So it's important for us to kind of reach a wide range of people in kind of like a non-salesy, non-threatening way. It's not like we have like a cheap product that you just buy and then you kind of you never hear from us again. We have to have like multiple touch points for people. Yeah, so from that side of things, attracting sellers is always like one of our main focuses. So, I mean, ultimately, if you have a good business that you're selling, there's always going to be a buyer looking to buy it. And we have like hundreds of buyers to every specific individual business we sell. And there'll be lots of buyers. We have many buyers who have bought multiple businesses as well. So there's always a challenge. I mean, I think it's kind of whether you're in the online space or even the offline space, attracting like good businesses to sell is always going to be a challenge. There's ultimately always going to be a buyer there if you've got yeah. a good business. But yeah. I mean, we also do put a lot of time and resource into educating buyers. So we have ebooks, physical books, an active blog. We quite often, like I'm doing today, go on podcasts and things like that and talk about the industry. So we also do a lot of like education for buyers. So while it's not necessarily a like number one focus when it comes to marketing, the actual educating is important to us, because obviously someone might be interested in buying a business, but if they have no idea what they're doing, then from a broker perspective, they're quite difficult to work with. So it's in our best interest for the buyers we deal with to be like well educated as well. So that's another focus.
So let me ask you something, since you had mentioned that the difficulty in the marketplace is really about increasing the supply side because you have this huge demand on the buyer side. So in the past 5 years, it seems like we've kind of seen the opposite of that. Like, so we've had marketplaces where, you know, that's presumably where some of the supply originally started, places like SitePoint and Flippa, things like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And we've seen a massive rise in brokers in the past 5 years. And I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing. In fact, you know, FE International has really sort of stood up above all the others in terms of legitimacy and quality. You know, you guys put out some great content and stuff like that. But, you know, if the brokers are representing more buyers, how are we getting more supply out of that?
I mean, I think – so firstly, there's – when we have a kind of supply issue, we're very fussy with the type of business we take on. And what we're – there's always a lack of like quality businesses. There's never a lack of people who want to sell their business. So you'll see marketplaces such as Flippa will probably increase in listing numbers every single year. But 99% of – well, maybe even more than that, 99% of the sites listed there are not suitable for a broker. So the number of – good businesses, while there might be a lot of like signaling in the industry that more and more people are listing businesses, as you like rightly pointed out, the brokerage space is very competitive. So if you're a new entrant in the market and you're trying to like build up some momentum, you do need to have inventory. So a lot of like brokers starting out and getting into the industry will be a little bit less fussy with what they take on. So it might seem like there's a lot of inventory out there and more businesses being sold, but that doesn't necessarily mean the supply of quality businesses is increasing. But having said that, I think you are right. Like with more brokers out there, there are now a lot more options for people who are selling. Whereas previously, when I started out there were some brokers out there. But your basic only option was go to a like an old school broker who might take 6 months to sell you a $100,000 business, which is like something that I look to change, or go to a marketplace. Whereas now people do have a lot more choice. So I feel like there has been an increase in the supply of quality businesses just through awareness. But the actual like volume of businesses in general, I think that's not necessarily indicative of more quality businesses out there. Because I mean, if we didn't filter what came in the door, we could be listing hundreds of businesses a month. But like serious buyers don't want to buy rubbish businesses, and we don't want to be we don't want to be represented to them either. So
yeah, and thank you for that, because believe me, if I saw that kind of crap in my email box, I'd be unsubscribing from FE International very quickly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we're always very conscious that our reputation relies on quality. While everyone won't necessarily like every business we put out there, we like to make sure that we're not just listing businesses for the sake of listing them.
So to stand that idea kind of on its head a little bit, you've talked at MicroConf, you talked to MicroConf Europe, I know you've talked in Vegas before, about, you know, the typical sort of things you can do to get your business ready to be sold talk. Can we take that like a bit further and say, like, what are a couple of things you've seen that really stand out as like some sellers did this and it made their listing just super attractive to buyers? So things that would either get a huge multiple or get it out the door real quick.
Yes. I mean, we always go through the same process with people up front. So, and the materials we present to buyers will always have the same level of detail. So if a seller can't provide the information or answer the questions we have, then it will never get listed. So if you look at our businesses, there's never really a difference between one or the other where one of them has kind of answered questions well and the other one hasn't, because we'll always clarify with them. Uh-huh. Generally speaking, though, we find like the best clients and the businesses that are most sellable is where the seller knows, not necessarily involved in the business 24/7, because from a buyer perspective, they'd rather take over a business where the owner doesn't spend their entire life on the business, but where they know their numbers are very organized. They know all their metrics. So, for example, if it's a SaaS business, they know what their churn is, and they know all the other like relevant metrics from there. When it comes to questions, we ask a lot of questions up front. We usually ask sellers around 100 questions.
Wow. Do you do that over email, or do you guys Skype through it?
We usually do it via email. We have like an internal system we use.
Form,
depending
yeah.
on the question. Yeah, like a form that they'll fill out. Depending on like the type of business they have. So we ask a lot of questions. And obviously different sellers will answer in a different way, but the best sellers will provide like detailed and honest answers, whereas the worst sellers they'll still answer questions, but they won't be answered in such a good way. And they'll be in a situation where sometimes buyers might do a little bit digging into what they say, and it might turn out they've not been particularly honest. So the best sellers we deal with and the businesses that are most desirable is where the seller's been honest throughout and can answer like every question the majority of questions anyway, in like a detailed and honest way. And the same with numbers, they actually know they know their numbers and all their figures. And from a buyer perspective, the better their questions are answered, the less risk there is in the business. If you're dealing with a business where the seller's just giving you one word answers and doesn't have all of their numbers in good order, then that represents more risk. So you're less likely to pay
premium for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Pay a premium. Exactly.
Sure.
So I want to go back a little bit, Thomas. You had mentioned that, you know, before FEI, you had, you know, people that were, you know, more traditional business brokers and, you know, it would take them 6 months to sell a 100K business. What's your pre-FEI background and how did you get started with FE International specifically? I mean, that's kind of an interesting transition into there, especially given that gap that existed in the market about the time that, you know, Flippa and SitePoint were taking off.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started out, I was actually at university and just looking to make a little bit of extra cash on the side. So at the time, I hadn't started out thinking I'm going to set up a brokerage business. I actually started out buying and selling websites myself. Very small. At the time, it was like SitePoint Marketplace. And as you also mentioned, that then turned into Flippa. So this was back in like 2009, early 2010. Off the back of that, I got quite like reasonably successful, like buying and selling like very small sites. We're talking like a couple hundred dollars or like a few thousand dollars a piece. So got quite good at that. Wrote a ebook off the back of it, like teaching people to buy and sell websites. And then people started approaching me saying, oh, hey, read your ebook, it's really good. I've done your course, I've watched this, read everything you've said, but I don't actually want to sell my business myself. Can you just do it for me? So kind of by accident fell into the brokerage industry and realized there was a demand from people who did want to sell their businesses. But they either didn't like the brokerage options that were there at the time or didn't want to go through the hassle of selling on a marketplace like Flippa themselves. So that was kind of the opportunity that I saw. And then that kind of turned into a more, after doing a couple of those and finding more and more people coming to me asking for it, turned into a more formal service. And I guess now we've got to the stage where mid-2015, we've done nearly 350 deals. There's a team of 11. We're consistently growing, consistently doing more deals. So, yeah.
That's amazing.
Grew out from that.
Wow.
That's amazing. I think you're being very modest, which I, you know, understand is the British way to do things. But, you know, it really is amazing. I mean, I Dave and I both want to sort of pick your brain about buying and selling sites, but just from a talking about your business, you've been super successful. I mean, you've grown FE International sort of exponentially, right? I mean, what aside from maybe I think everybody has to be a little bit the right place at the right time, but you guys have done a lot right on top of that. What do you attribute some of your success to?
I mean, I think starting out is very much a case of a little bit of luck, being right place, right time, but also identifying something people wanted. Because at the time, I thought the business was always going to be buying, selling for ourselves, or possibly making money out of like ebooks or courses. Never occurred to me it might actually be the service. But once people started asking for it on a consistent basis, kind of spotted that gap. And to be perfectly honest, like from there, started hiring people in 2011. So the kind of the growth of the business and success of the business is now a lot less about me and a lot more about the team. So having a good team in place is like important. You can't scale a business, you can't grow consistently every year by yourself. Yeah. Unless you just want to freelance, which is like perfectly fine, but I've always tried to build out a company. So I've always found having a good business partner is important, and having a good team, because as an individual it's very difficult to be good at every single element of the business. So ideally you want to have a business partner who you might share a lot of values and share the same goals, but you have like different skill set, which is important and was certainly important for me. And then just kind of like hiring the right people who can continue to like offer the service you were originally offering yourself, but in a way that's kind of a lot more scalable. So yeah, starting out is very much, I think, kind of right place, right time, but also identifying the opportunity. But over time, it's really just been a case of building out a good team. Yeah. You can't make $1 million a year in revenue by yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not achievable without
$10,000 an hour, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's just
there are very few freelancers that are doing that. That's for sure.
So you know, Dave, I'm gonna jump off the tracks a little bit here, but Tom, you know, Thomas, we're hiring our first full-time employee right now for Podcast Motor, and it's a landscape changer for us, you know, in how I approach the business and how we have things structured. I know you guys have a pretty good sized team there. I don't have a co-founder, so that I guess I'd like to hear kind of your thoughts on how, just briefly, I guess, how that came about and what that dynamic is like as you grow the business, but also just a couple of quick, you know, tools or frameworks that you've used to grow the business and kind of stay organized as you scale. Because it gets out of hand after, you know, they say every time you triple, you have to kind of reinvent the wheel.
Absolutely. I've heard. So with regards to a business partner, I started out with a different the original co-founder got bought out in 2012 by my current business partner, who's Ismail, and I went to university with Ismail. So I started off the business. He went into the corporate world, did like mergers and acquisitions on a much larger scale than we do now, and then joined the business in 2012. He joined when we had a good service, the business was solid, we were making money. But we needed to like formalize a lot of things we were doing. We were offering like a good service if you had like a $20,000 business, but it wasn't suitable if you had a $200,000 business. So kind of identified a need to bring him in. And also, I'm not the most organized person in the world, and it was important for me to have someone that could come in and actually like build like proper structure and help hire. Because while we had staff, it wasn't really organized in a particularly good way. So he came in and like put like systems and processes in place from day one to help manage the team. Because now there's 11 of us. Like you say, you can't do that yourself. You've got to have systems and processes in place. So nowadays, I mean, we have an office in London. We have an office in Boston. And we also have some of our team are remote. So we have people all over the place, all different time zones, different countries, different roles. So we communicate, we use Atlassian, Jira, HipChat. It's kind of all under the same company. So we use like HipChat for internal conversation, Jira for project managing, like keeping track of everything we're doing. Mm-hmm. And we also have a CRM that we built out, which tracks all of our leads, which is a little bit like Salesforce, but more relevant to websites and like what we do. So a lot of it is kind of system based. Everything everyone does, like gets logged in a system. So if like a person is out or on the phone, they know what's going on without actually having to be the person in contact with the client or whatever. So it's always been systems. Ismail, I mean, a lot of the things that Ismail's taught me is like building SOPs, so standard operating procedures around every different parts of the process.
Bleh.
So I'm currently training someone for my team at the moment, and that's what she's doing. Like I'm teaching her how to do things, and then she's like building out her own wiki, her own SOPs to make sure that she can kind of replicate that. It's kind of unavoidable. There's no way to do it without actually writing out your systems and processes. So that's the key. And then having like a central place to manage it. Things like email are great, and like I send a lot of emails every day, but it's not a particularly good way to manage. Some companies will run off like Google Docs and things like that. But for a company like ours, we have to track like multiple clients, multiple different touch points, multiple active deals. So something like Google Drive, whatever, it's just not.
That's
really
well
like
beyond a spreadsheet at that point.
Exactly. So a spreadsheet might be good when you've got a team of like three people and you can kind of work off because you've only got 10 clients. But when you've got thousands and thousands of buyers and hundreds of different like active sellers at different stages in the process, you really need to have systems. So we've invested hundreds of thousands of dollars over the years in our own systems, which is important. It's kind of like our secret sauce. It's not really saying that a client directly benefits from, because we mainly use it for internal things, but it's meant that we can grow and we have a lot of data on deals. So it means that when we have a business that we're selling, we already have a lot of data on like which buyers will be interested without having to like remember them all by name, because when you've got thousands, it's quite difficult. Valuation wise, we keep a lot of data, so it means that every single time we value a new business, we're going to be more accurate than the previous time because mm-hmm. we've got more data. So we're quite data driven in that respect. We make sure that everything we keep and everything we track is actually used to improve the service, because I think it's quite easy, especially as you grow, to kind of forget about like what you actually do, which is the service you offer clients. It's always like very keen to ensure we're constantly improving it, as well as like building out the team. Because ultimately, in a service business, as you know, if your service is no good or starts to get worse and worse, like quality wise, you're only going to lose clients.
So, I'd like to get back to the buying and selling part again here. Can you tell us what you see is the toughest part about buying and selling websites today?
I think from a buyer perspective, it's a very competitive space now. I mean, there are a lot of buyers, a lot more buyers have entered the industry than sellers in the last, say, 5 years, which I would say is like since the company started and since we started brokering. So might have started out, there might have been, say, 100 active buyers, whereas now we have like over 6,000 active buyers, which I guess is partly due to us as a firm growing, but also due to the industry as a whole growing. So from a buyer perspective, I'd say it's just generally competition. There are a lot of other buyers out there. You need to be in like the best position possible to buy if you are actually like in that position, which is why part of the reason we spend like so much like money and just resource and time in general on educating buyers, because it's important that if you are actually looking, you know what you're doing and you're not asking like stupid questions or whatever, where you start to kind of struggle if you're buying through a broker. From a seller perspective, I mean, without trying to sound too biased, I don't think there's been a better time ever to be a seller than now. There are a lot of buyers out there. There are now, especially from when I first started out, I feel like there are a lot better options out there if you actually do want to sell. You're not stuck doing it yourself, and you're not stuck with an old school broker who's going to take months and months and months over a process. Just with the number of buyers in the industry, valuations are improving. The chance of a sale is a lot higher than it used to be. Like our average success rate for a deal, like 93% of sites we list will sell.
That's amazing.
So I guess if you get through the process of us, it's almost guaranteed to sell.
And that's within 6 months or something?
It's more like 60 days. The vast majority of sites to sell will sell within 60 days. Like the bigger the deal, the longer it takes. So if it's a $2 million sure. business, you might expect it to take 6 months. If it's a $20,000 business, we'll probably complete it in 2 weeks. And then kind of anything in between. From a seller perspective, I think there are now a lot better options out there. And because the brokerage industry is so competitive, I feel like they're like brokers themselves actually have to be like quite good to compete. You're not going to stay around in the industry for long. So chances are if a broker has been around for like 5 or 6 years and they're still making money and they've actually got a team, then they're probably going to know what they're doing versus like trying to sell a business yourself. And like with the marketplaces out there, to be perfectly honest, like there aren't really that many options out there. Like you could list somewhere like Flipper, but they're going to charge you a listing fee up front. You have to do all of the work yourself, and then you have to pay them a 10% success fee. Whereas if you work with a broker, they will do all the work for you. And if you work with us, we usually charge you 15%. So you pay a little bit more, but you don't have to do anywhere near as much work. And the success rate is like pretty much 100%. It's very rare for something we list not to sell.
That is sure as hell not the case on Flipit, let me tell you.
Yeah,
which I can say from personal experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So someone on Flipit, like your success rate is going to be, I think they claim it's like 60%, but in reality it's going to be lower than that for most businesses, I would have thought. Especially if it's your first time selling, you don't know. If you've got a good reputation, it's a little bit different. To conclude, as a buyer, it's just a very competitive space now. As a seller, I feel like it's a much better industry than it was 5 years ago, and you're kind of almost spoiled for choice in terms of options. And I don't think there's any like major problems in that respect.
So you were saying that you guys spend a ton of time, and I've received a lot of your great content about educating buyers, educating sellers. But despite all of that, it seems like And maybe this isn't true within, because I haven't personally brokered a deal with FE International, but it still seems like there's a ton of buyers and sellers out there, especially on Flippa, clearly, that just have totally unreasonable expectations on both sides. And so how do you actually manage that in your transactions personally?
My approach, or our approach in general, is just being fair to people up front. We're very open with them about our process and what it looks like and the expectations. And we're going to be honest with you very early in the process what we think your business is worth and what it's going to sell for. And if people have unrealistic expectations, then I guess one of the benefits of running your own business is we don't have to deal with them. So we're very selective because we only get paid if a business sells. We're not going to take it on if the seller's got unrealistic expectations. To combat, as you say, like a lot of optimistic people who want like too much, I'm just very upfront with people. And the team is very upfront and honest. We don't string people along. We're very clear about what we think their business will sell for. And if we're on the same page and we all agree we want to work together, then we'll work with that client. If not, as you say, these people usually end up somewhere like Flipper or trying to sell themselves. But generally, they're just going to be wasting a lot of time. And obviously, we're not always going to be right, but the vast majority of the time, we've got a pretty good idea what a buyer's willing to pay for a business. So having unrealistic expectations, either in terms of valuation, time frame, like deal structure, are probably the three most common reasons for walk away from a deal or a client.
Just to dig into deal structure a little bit there, is seller financing becoming more popular, or is it less popular because sellers don't have to sort of cater to buyers as much since the supply and demand is so shifted?
Yeah, that's a good question. So on the lower end, I said lower end, so the five-figure market, which is like where we do quite a lot of volume, the vast majority of deals are 100% cash. We very rarely do deals that have financing. Sometimes deals will need an element of seller financing just because of the nature of the business. So if a business is really reliant on a seller and they like work on the business full time, then some sort of like performance deal is kind of almost inevitable.
Keep them on the hook.
On the higher end, the majority of deals will have some financing in there. It's pretty much unavoidable. You don't necessarily have to have a deal that has financing in there, but if you are open to at least some, maybe like 20% or 30% of the overall price, then there are a lot more buyers out there. And generally speaking, if you offer some sort of structure, then you're going to get a better deal overall. A buyer paying cash is going to expect to get like a pretty good deal on a business, because I guess like cash is king. Still cliche, but I mean that really is true. But I mean, so knowing what we know and knowing that the vast majority of large deals will always have an element of financing, we put a lot of focus into like practical deal structures, making sure contracts are drafted properly, which is a very important part, and making sure that the sellers kept safe, because the vast majority of clients we deal with are quite open to vast majority of selling clients we deal with are open to financing, assuming they're kept safe.
Mm-hmm.
And the main point of resistance we get is, oh, what if the buyer decides to stop paying me? How do I ensure I'm safe? So we've put a lot of focus into ensuring that we have some like kind of go-to deal structures that are safe for like both parties and kind of win-wins. Because I mean, ultimately with Broken Wall, it's our job to get the seller the maximum possible price of the business. We also want to get them a structure that kind of makes sense. Sometimes a deal that's like cash plus financing makes more sense than a straight up cash deal, because there's less risk in it for a buyer, or there's just more buyers out there willing to buy a business with some financing. So it's interesting. You'd think as the, I guess, kind of undersupply of businesses and more buyers entering the industry, you would think that would lead to like more cash mm-hmm. deals. But we've found not really the case. I think just the nature of buying businesses in general, I think that's always going to be the way. So we've always focused on, rather than trying to find people cash deals, focusing on ways to keep the deal as like safe as possible for everyone involved.
And you said 20 or 30%. Is that the I would say down payment, the cash investment, or the amount that would be financed?
So the amount to be financed. Uh-huh. So I mean, it depends on the size. So we would my general advice to someone is, if they came to us with say a $300,000 business, they'd probably expect to get around like $250,000 up front and then $50,000 like over 12 months or whatever. Slightly bigger businesses might be slightly less cash down. So $1 million deal might be $700,000 plus $300,000. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the cash element is always going to be a significant portion. We aim for 80%, but it really depends on the business and also what the seller wants. Sometimes the seller might want to like get through the process a little bit quicker, so they're a little bit more opening to financing. Sure. And other times sellers are kind of a little bit more firm on what they want.
Yeah. Neat. So Both Dave and I are going to Rhodium Weekend here in a couple weeks. Actually, it'll be right around the time this show goes live, probably the end of October. What advice could you give us as two dudes who are relatively decent business owners and both probably in the market to make an acquisition sometime in the next maybe year or so?
Yeah, so my advice to – so firstly, when you're there, you'll meet David from our team who's speaking.
Looking forward to his talk, actually.
Yeah, it should be interesting. But, I mean, generally speaking, like if you're a buyer – there's no reason why you shouldn't speak to multiple brokers. We always find with us, like, our advice to people if they want to buy a business through us or like they want to buy a business in general is kind of make yourself known to brokers, but always do a little bit of like digging before you start dealing with a broker. There are a lot of brokers out there who will just list a lot of like really rubbish businesses, and then in that case you might as well just be looking flipper or buying privately. You want to find like the quality brokers, but they are out there, and just being like really honest with what you want. We find the best buyers we deal with will come to us and they'll say, hey, my name is Craig, I have $100,000 to invest and I'm not looking to buy now, but I'm looking to buy in 6 months. I would like a SaaS business or a WordPress plugin business. And then from there, obviously, like our brokers and our sales team want to make sure they're putting the right opportunities in front of you. So if you said that to us, it's unlikely that they're going to email you with like a $1 million SEO business, because
right,
it just doesn't fit your criteria. So the more, the better you are with your criteria with us, or I think any broker in general, the more likely you are to get the right opportunities put in front of you. And the more honest you are as well, like the worst thing to do would be coming in and saying, oh yeah, I've got $1 million to spend and I want to buy a business ASAP, but actually only having 50,000 and thinking that you'd rather just see every business that comes in the door.
That's that aligning expectations thing again, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So aligning expectations. And another thing with us as well is because we have a CRM, we track so many things. We like keep a lot of notes on buyers. So if you give us feedback throughout a deal, we don't expect – if you say, oh yeah, I want to buy a SaaS business, my budget's $100,000, and we send you a SaaS business that's $100,000, and you don't then buy that business, we're certainly not going to hold it against you. But we always value like feedback. So if you say, oh yeah, I like this business, but I don't like the fact it's B2C and it's a $7 a month product, then that's useful, and we'll kind of use it to refine down from there. So I can't necessarily guarantee all other brokers like that, but a good broker should kind of do their best to take your feedback on board and put more and more relevant businesses in front of you.
That conversation is exactly the conversation David and I had over just a couple of emails after a listing went out maybe 3 weeks ago. And I just said, you know, hey, this is generally kind of in the ballpark of what I'm looking for. The niche, I think, was not exactly what I was looking for, and the model wasn't exactly right. But I gave them that feedback, and I love that you guys are engaged at such a detailed level with the buyers. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, that kind of leads to it's part of the reason we have such a high success rate, and partly reason why buyers sit on our list for years and don't unsubscribe is because we're not continuously kind of like calling you at 8 o'clock in the evening trying to sell you a business you have absolutely no interest in. Whereas if you're actually actively looking to buy a business, and no one ever gets annoyed being sent something that they want to buy, whereas people get annoyed if you start sending them lots of irrelevant businesses they have no interest in. So our approach does tend to be show people a little bit more than they think they might want, because sometimes people come in and they say, hey, look, got $100,000, I want to buy a SaaS business or the WordPress plugin business. But you might actually find that they end up buying a e-commerce business that's like $150,000. So we do keep notes, but we always like keep an open mind as well. And the better we get to know buyers, the more likely we are to kind of reach out with opportunities we think might be interesting.
Yeah, in fact, I was just going back through my notes, and I've had probably three conversations with James and David over the past year, and I was specifically looking for a SaaS business, and a couple of opportunities came up that were in my price range. But in one case, the niche wasn't that interesting, and I was kind of like, I can't see myself actually running this particular niche right here. So I gave that feedback to, I think it was James at the time. But yeah, I mean, you guys are very good about listening to buyers and then structuring your responses based on that information. So that's great. I really appreciate that. So
yeah, so I mean, that's part of the reason we invest so much in our system, so we can be in a position where that data is actually useful. Because it's one thing asking for feedback and like asking for what you're looking for, but if you don't actually then keep track of it, then it's not really any use to anyone.
So Thomas, one last question. This is you are our second British guest in a row, and Dave and I were under the impression that the Beatles were the British invasion. What's going on, man?
I've no idea who you spoke to in your last podcast, but well, we're an international business. We're all over the place. Well, we met in Barcelona, so yeah, that was kind of not home ground for
either
of
us. The world. No, we had Dave. We had Dave Collins on last week, and it was fantastic talk about sort of SEO and.
Oh yeah, great. Yeah, Dave's
fantastic.
Smart,
no, it's it is an international world that we live in, this little sort of, you know, bootstrapping niche that we're all in. I actually had a conversation yesterday with a guy from Amsterdam, and I think it's just fantastic. I'm in awe every day of how our reach is, with relative ease, is truly global. Coming from the world that I came from, and probably Dave, you a bit as well, you know, even sort of regionally, is a bit of a stretch, and now all these things are just so easy to do around the world. It just makes me sound old, but makes me feel really good.
Yeah, I think it's one of the best things in the industry in general. And part of the reason I like it is you kind of deal with people from all different backgrounds, all like different kind of ages, locations, cultures. Yeah. So I think it's nice. Yep.
Thomas, if folks want to sort of find out more about you and FE International and either side of the market, where can they head?
Yeah, so the best thing to do would be go to our website, feinternational.com. If you're just kind of like generally looking for information, either download one of our ebooks. We've got various ebooks about buying websites. We've got an ebook on selling websites coming up. Check out our blog. We've got various content, whether you're looking to like buy a business, sell a business, grow a business, general entrepreneurship advice. We publish a real range. If anyone's got any like particular questions for me directly, then my email's thomas@feinternational.com. More than happy to kind of answer questions. I know sometimes some things people would rather keep to a private email rather than kind of more publicly asking like a comment or whatever. So yeah, I would just recommend going to our website. It's easy to navigate and find your way around. And if you're looking to buy something, then as you say, you're probably here from David or James.
Awesome. Thomas, thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.